720 WGN, John Landecker for Ro Khan. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesday with Tom, and that means Tom Skilling. Good afternoon, Tom. How are you?
John, I'm doing swell. How neat to talk to you after all
it's
these
It's good.
Years,
I like talking to Tom Skilling. I'm a big fan, too. Not of me, of you, Tom.
Thank you, John. Thanks.
You're welcome.
It's a real pleasure to talk to you.
We've got
an interesting weather week here, John. Let's
get into it.
Here. Yeah.
You've got Marco and Laura in the Gulf. That's somewhat diminished, right, the strength of those two?
Yeah, Marco is pretty well faded out. It's a little disturbance off the Louisiana coast. The big threat now is Laura. And what's so ominous about Laura is, A, it's going to become a major hurricane. That means a hurricane with 111-mile-per-hour winds or greater. In Saffir-Simpson terms, that's a Cat 2 or a Cat 3 or greater storm. This thing could even get up to a Category 4 with 135-mile-per-hour winds, say some of our models. And what's really kind of scary about this one, John, is this thing is shifting. Our model forecasts are taking it closer and closer to the Houston-Galveston area. It looks like the area from Galveston, Texas, all the way over to Morgan City, Louisiana, is in big trouble. And a Category 2 and 3 storm could take the storm surge, in other words, the rise in sea level, up to anywhere from 9 to as much as 13 feet. That'd be like raising the level of Lake Michigan 9 to 13 feet and putting waves on top of it. So you can imagine what that does to a coastline.
Amazing.
And yeah, it really is. And, you know, Galveston, Texas, is to this day the site of the most deadly natural disaster in U.S. history, and that was the Galveston hurricane of 1900. That thing killed over 8,000 people, but it may have been as many as 12,000 people, because back in those days, we didn't have satellite imagery or modeling or anything like that. They had lost track of that hurricane once it hit Cuba. There were some meteorologists at the time that thought it was going up the East Coast, when in fact it was out over the open Gulf, and it moved in almost without warning to the Houston-Galveston area and just led to a debacle down there, you know, a real disaster. They built a seawall at the time in Galveston, which is still there, and over time a sandbar developed next to it. And these developers went in and put condos on the sandbar, which is on the ocean side of the seawall. You know, talk about putting people in, you know, a dumb move. That was it.
Wow.
Isn't that something? Yeah.
We're going to upgrade your room. Where do you see this? We're going to upgrade you. You're going to love it.
Yeah. Wow. You'll have a heck of a view of the ocean. The problem is it may come in to visit you, literally, you know, into the living room. I don't know. But they take their storms pretty seriously, although some developers
apparently not.
So all of this activity,
you know, is it hot enough for you? Does it cause the Gulf influence the temperature here and the humidity?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Whenever we get one of these big tropical systems, they require the calmest atmosphere in which to develop, and yet they become the biggest windstorms on Earth. And once developed, they exercise influence on other weather systems. And what tends to happen, John, is the progression of weather systems from west to east slows down. And so I think some of this heat that we've got may extend into Friday as a result of that storm being there, because what happens is the air vents out the top of these hurricanes and tropical systems like air coming out of a chimney, and it migrates hundreds of miles away and then sinks. So the air blows out the top of all the thunderstorms that organize and make the hurricane, then it sinks hundreds of miles away, and whenever the air sinks, it compresses and warms, and so you get this incredible heat dome to develop around the northern flank of these storms. And we're in such a heat dome. It was here to begin with, but it may be intensified by the presence of a hurricane down in the Gulf of Mexico. So it looks now like that thing will come ashore, perhaps in northeast Texas, and then move north to the Ohio Valley and then curve eastward out toward the mid-Atlantic. So it could bring some pretty good rains to the southern Midwest. We could sure use some of that here. We're many parts of our areas are very dry.
I was intrigued by watching the track of the two storms at the same time moving parallel into the coast area. What? I've never seen anything like that.
No, you know, what we thought might happen was an effect known as the Fujiwara effect. And that's what happens when you bring two of these tropical cyclones or tropical storms, hurricanes, within, say, 850 miles of one another. When that happens, if you can get two of them of equal strength simultaneously to be that close together, they start rotating around each other. Now, when you get two storms close together, and it has happened before, it's not an every year occurrence, but this kind of thing's been noted with typhoons out in the Pacific and everything else. If you get a very strong storm within 800 miles of a weaker storm, then what happens is the weaker storm tends to die out. And never do these storms combine, but it is interesting the effect they have on one another once they do develop and they move, you know, within roughly 850 miles of one another is when the effect starts being noted. And the Fujiwara effect is named after a Japanese researcher who back in 1921 was doing some research on vortices in water. And he noticed, and you know, the atmosphere is like it's a fluid too. It's not as dense as water, but the circulations within it, the eddies respond very much like they do in a bowl of water or a pan of water. And he found that when these eddies got close to one another, they tended to rotate around them. But you're right. It's not an every year occurrence. It's pretty rare.
Have two of those storms ever touched down simultaneously?
Have
they always?
No.
Oh, wow.
What doesn't happen, John?
Man.
They don't get together. They don't merge into a super hurricane.
Right.
Yeah. So they'll stay independent of one another, but what happens is the physics of these storms is such that they can't combine.
Right.
But they
right.
can influence other ones kind of nearby. And so they can affect the way each of the systems moves, and also their intensity if there's a disparity to begin with, if one is
right.
stronger than the other.
It's Tuesday with Tom, and that means Tom Skilling, and it's sponsored by PermaSeal Basement Systems, and we'll be back on 720 WGN. WGN, John Landecker for Row Con. It's Tuesday, and that means Tom Skilling. Fires in California. My daughters are out there, and I've been out there the past few years off and on, and it's like an annual event, only it just seems getting worse and worse. Jumping expressways, burning down entire homes. It's insane.
It is insane. I mean, just when you think, you know, we've established a new record for number of acres burned or the air quality being horrendous and life-threatening, you know, the next year gets worse. No, it has been getting worse. Do you know something, John? They've done some research, and they found that the acreage burned has quintupled. It's five times what it was back in the early 70s. And this isn't all raking the forest or anything like that. This is, you know, what burns oftentimes are grasslands. And the problem is you get a couple of years where you get some pretty good rain out there and you seem to make a dent in the drought, but that leads to flourishing vegetation, which then dries out, as happened this year in one of these incredible heat waves that are becoming more and more frequent. So you superimpose triple-digit heat on drought conditions. And I was looking at the rainfall they've had, you know, this month, for instance. Some areas have had rainfall measured in hundredths of an inch if they've had any rain at all. Then you bring these dry thunderstorms in, thunderstorms that produce all kinds of lightning, which is what happened in this case starting a couple weeks ago. And the lightning ignites the fires, and they spread like crazy because it's so dry and so hot out there. So, and the smoke plume they produce, it's even reached into the Midwest now. We're having these gorgeous sunrises and sunsets that's the product of smoke coming off these things. And we can track that smoke now by satellite. And my word, this covers half the country, the lower 48, the smoke does. And you can only imagine your daughters in that area living through that hellacious situation must be just awful, because how do you get away from the smoke? You know, it's just
it's a terrible. Good question. I know that it's incredible to be driving down an expressway in the Los Angeles area that you're accustomed to traveling on, and on both sides of the road, the hills are on fire. I mean, it's just incredible. And, I mean, I don't think you ever get used to it, but it's a fact of life out there. It seems to be happening with great regularity. And as you say, it covers most of the country. It affects the humidity and the temperature even here, I'm guessing, right?
It does. Well, yeah. It does indeed, John. And you know what's interesting is this is the first time they get these thunderheads, these cumulonimbus clouds, these big towering cumulus clouds that produce thunderstorms to develop over these fires. And this is the first year where they actually had a tornado spin up from one of those cumulonimbus clouds. And when they issued the tornado warning, this was up on the California or out on the California-Nevada border. It occurred the weekend before this past one. And this put down a heck of a tornado. We've all over the years seen these tornadic vortices that develop from the fires. But this was an actual tornado with a thunderstorm overhead. And, you know, that's the first time that had been cataloged. So there are all kinds of things that follow from these fires and the release of smoke.
The temperature is way up there, and the fields-like temperature is way up there. But, you know, the Farmer's Almanac, always looking ahead, predicts an interesting winter, whatever that means. What is an interesting winter?
The Farmer's Almanac, that's kind of, we people in the weather profession look at that as hocus pocus. It's a fun read, but, nobody's been able to tell you exactly how they come up with the forecast they do. And people have actually looked at how accurate those are. If you flip the coin, you'd be more accurate than some of these forecasts that come out of the Farmer's Almanac. Seriously.
It's a great read, though. It's a page turner.
It is. It's a lot of fun. I'll tell you that the articles in those farmers' almanacs are really kind of fun to read. They have a lot of good information. But about this winter, John, you know, the thing that's happening that may have an impact on our winter is this La Nina, which is a cooling of the ocean waters west of South America along the equator. That may seem like something going on far off, and it is. But there again, when you start fiddling with the weather in the equatorial regions, there are impacts farther north up here in the mid-latitudes. And what La Niñas do is, A, they improve the environment in the Atlantic Basin for hurricanes because they cut down on vertical wind shear there. And in our area, they often lead to winters with above-normal precipitation and great volatility in terms of temperature, even more than we normally see during a winter. So you go from periods of mild Pacific air to periods of cold air out of the Arctic, and you do so in fairly dramatic fashion at times. So the notion that there may be an interesting winter coming up may be right. What'll be interesting to see, I was looking, though, we did an in-house study of what kind of winters we have in Chicago after when the La Niñas are running. We found there's a tendency, when all is said and done, for the winter to average slightly above normal, even though it has very cold periods within it. And there also is an increased possibility of more rain and snow than average. And the determination of whether it's rain as versus snow or vice versa will depend a lot on the temperature when these storms it produces comes through. So it's going to be an interesting winter to watch.
Do we go in cycles? I've always wondered. You know, we have these years where this unbelievable blizzard occurs, the amount of snow on the ground is, can't move. Is there some sort of cycle to that thing, or is it just arbitrary?
You know, we wish there was, because it would make forecasting a lot simpler. I remember I had a climatology professor up at the University of Wisconsin who said, you know, climatologists have fed weather observations into computers, and they've look backwards, forwards, and upside down for any kind of regular cyclicality. We used to think there was a cycle related to the sunspots in drought. But the fact is, John, there are some cycles, like the lake. Lake levels go up and down. There's a cycle to that. It's not regular, but they do. If you were to plot Lake Michigan's level, and we're at record highs now, you'd find that going back to the turn of the last century, which is how far back our records go in this, you'd find ups and downs, and there does seem to be a cyclicality to it, but it's not regular. And the same is true of weather. There haven't been well-defined cycles that you can work with. If you're talking about geologic timescales, like tens of thousands of years and the ice ages and all, there is a cycle to that, and it's related with the way Earth rotates around the sun, and we wobble on our axis relative to the sun. And those cycles run every, some of them run every 22,000 years, something like that.
Well, I wasn't thinking in terms of 22,000 years, maybe 22 years.
Right.
So, exactly. Let me shift gears here, Tom. How's the weight loss journey going?
Oh, gosh. You know, I was off yesterday because I had my first physical since having this gastric bypass surgery. It's going great. I'm down about 100 pounds.
Fantastic.
It really is interesting, John. I tell you, anybody who's considering that, don't be afraid of it. It's great. What I was interested to see is what the cholesterol did and all, because I had gone into the first stage diabetes with my weight. It's gone now. I'm no longer diabetic. And the blood sugar has come down. The cholesterol levels have come down. And that's what they're finding with these surgeries. The whole system reacts to that, and in a very positive way. So I was thrilled with the numbers I got, and I think my doctors were getting a kick out of it, too, because it verified what they found about these surgeries, and that is if you can get the weight down, you start having impacts on, other stuff, like your cholesterol and stuff like that.
Right. What about the weather for the weekend? Where are we? I know it's hot. Tom, do you know it's hot? How hot is it? It is so
John,
hot.
That's why it's good to talk to you, because you inform me of these things,
What'd you do today?
Change everything, I told
Tom Skilling it's hot. Now he's got to go change the forecast. Wow.
That's it. I'll tell you. You talk about the myriad skills of John Landecker. I'll tell you that.
Come on.
Now it turns out they're meteorological, too. No, John, hopefully we're going to break the back of this hot spell and get into more seasonable weather. And I mean in a nice way. We'll drop the humidity and have daytime highs in the perhaps the low and mid-80s instead of the low and mid-90s is what we're thinking about right now. So we'll break out of this heat, which would be nice.
Absolutely. Well, thanks, Tom. Always great to talk with you.
John, great to talk with you, too. We got to do this more often.
Tuesdays with Tom Skilling, sponsored by PermaSeal Basement Systems on 720 WGN.